In Play with Pragmatic, made possible by Horton in Britain, a worldwide supplier of engine cooling systems and proud member of the community for more than four decades. HortonWW.com. Welcome to another edition of In Play. I'm Pragmatic. Today's guest was the first Class A wrestler in South Dakota to win four straight wrestling titles. Four other wrestlers have achieved that feat since our guest did it in the early 70s, a career mark of 93-1 in high school. Our guest was the first wrestler at SDSU to win 40 matches in a season, a national wrestling champ in 1976, and then went on to a long wrestling coaching career in the state. His high school coach called our guest the best he ever had. He's the former Watertown Arrow and SDSU Jackrabbit, Rick Jensen. Rick, welcome to In Play.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Watertown has had a history of great wrestlers, so for your Hall of Fame coach, Marv Sherrill, to call you his best ever, that's got to be a great compliment to you.
Well, yeah, it is. He's a pretty impactful individual. Yeah, pretty influential. Is a big part of my life. Got me off on the right track.
What age was it that you first ran into Coach Sherrill on the wrestling mat?
Well, I was a seventh grader in Watertown, South Dakota, and in the junior high system. And I happened to have his wife as an English teacher that year. I think that was their first year in town. He was hired that year, and his wife was very influential. Also, you knew one thing: you went to her class, she was going to keep you busy. But I had a gentleman named Vic Godfrey, who was our junior high wrestling coach, and he just kind of seeked out any very athletic kids that were in his physical education program, and he kind of pegged us, a few of us, to go ahead and get involved in wrestling. And by the time Christmas rolled around, I found myself in front of Marv Sherrill's format up at the high school. And so he pretty much was my major influence. Vic Godfrey got me started, and he turned me over to Marv Sherrill very quickly. And then the rest is kind of history.
What kind of a wrestling family was the Jensen family? I think you have a brother, right? Is Larry your brother?
Yeah, I'm the youngest of six children, and we had three boys, three girls. And back in those days, the girls weren't involved in sports; they just didn't have it around. They were all older, and my two brothers were basketball players, And once I got involved in wrestling, it didn't take long to figure out that my basketball career was probably over, and which had a little bit to do with my physical nature, the fact that I was very, very short, like my mother.
You started out, at 98 pounds in high school.
Back in those days, I suppose I was about a 75-pounder in seventh grade, and then bloomed right up to 85 the next year, and then eventually grew into that 95-pound range my freshman year. And probably a little bit of a surprise. I mean, I was successful, but did not start wrestling until seventh grade. But Marv Sherrill had a way of grinding it into you. If you were going to be in his room, you were definitely going to have to work hard. And I learned very quickly that the rewards came pretty quick if you followed his instructions and listened to him. So success came that freshman year, being in the right place at the right time probably has a lot to do with it, more than you realize. The right coach, the right incentives, the right hustle, and things just kind of fell into place.
The early 1970s, How many wrestling camps were out there for you to go to?
Well, the only camp I really ever took in was whatever Marv said I could go to, or whatever Marv drugged me to.
Sure.
Yeah, we weren't real modern back then. They had the old wrestling program over at Dakota State and Madison and SDSU and, you know, all our universities in the state of South Dakota had wrestling, and Marv would always convince kids that they need to go, and Marv made it very clear that, Jensen, you're riding with me. So I spent a lot of time in a lot of Volkswagens putting in time, and because that's what Marv always drove, was his Volkswagen. So that was the only way I got the things. And Marv made sure that I not only followed his instructions and listened to him very carefully, but he was going to make sure I attended anything that he felt was important. And that's just kind of the way he ran his wrestling room. I think we won state that my ninth grade year. We had a bunch of seniors in the team. And
you beat Yankton and Rapid City Central and Huron that year.
Yeah, we put five guys in the finals, and I think I don't even know what we placed in the ESD that year. I think we only placed about two kids in the ESD conference early in the year. And I guess I just kind of continued to surprise everybody, because freshmen just didn't spend a lot of time in lineups back in those days. And Marv found one and got me to produce. So I'm sure that was a little bit of a surprise. I think we had four seniors in the finals, I believe, and then myself, a freshman.
Two champions and three finishing second. Hey, that scores you a lot of points in the finals.
Yeah, it did back in those days. There's no question about that. It was quite an experience, and probably pretty exciting for here in South Dakota. You don't have a lot of state tournaments there anymore.
That's right. It was in Huron, and you're wrestling at 98, and you beat Tracy Upton of Aberdeen Central. Do you remember that?
Yeah, Tracy's a good bud. He had me down. I think I wrestled him three times that year, I think. But I ran into him in the semifinals of the regional tournament, and Marv was a pretty aggressive sideline coach. He'd get after you a little bit if you weren't putting out like he felt you were, or you're slacking a little bit, or you didn't want to be stalling if you're wrestling for Marv Sherrill's Watertown Arrow. So he'd get after you a little bit. So I think I was down coming out of the first period, going into that second period. I think eventually I was down 6-0 to Tracy. And Marv just kind of, first time I've ever seen him do it, but he just kind of put his hands up in the air like, well, that's that. Oh. You better get busy. So I got busy, and I think it was about 9-6 when we got done. And I was glad to get off the mat and try to figure out what in the heck happened there. So Tracy was pretty savvy. And then I ran into him in the finals of the state tournament that year. So it seems like every year, until I was a senior, I always ran into a senior, but there weren't a lot of us underclassmen around. It was kind of a big boy sport and an experience sport. So
1972, you're a sophomore. You move up a weight. You're at 105. And the wrestling tournament was in Watertown that year. How about that? You get to wrestle in the hometown, and you win your second title in front of the hometown. You beat Robin Miller of Sioux Falls, Washington.
Yeah, I ran into him in a dual meet, or a duel in at Washington, and I didn't know that much about him. But I knew he came down from 112, and I knew he was big, and I knew he was tall. It didn't take long to figure out this kid was hard to handle. So I just stayed after him, and But boy, you had to work your tail off just to score what little points you could get on there. It's just every wrestler has their problems with certain sizes and shapes of individuals. I'll tell you what, his height created all kinds of problems for me, and it's made sure I had to stay very efficient and just to get the job done. He was a handful.
Washington ran away with the title that year.
Yeah, they did. They ran away with
Watertown and Rapid City Central were second, but you guys were like 24 points away for Washington.
Yeah, Washington was pretty tough that year. You know, they had a lot of good kids, had some really exciting kids in the finals and in that tournament. And they're just numbers. Just they were on, and they were tough to handle. I don't even remember if we beat them in that duel that year. I know it was a good duel. And I know I was, once again, glad. Every time you hit an experienced kid back in those days, their physical nature sometimes would create a lot of problems for you. So, you know, not one of those state tournaments that I spent a lot of time thinking about. I was just mostly thinking I was glad to get by those guys.
yeah.
Their size and shape and experience caused a lot of problems for me. So, you know, at that point in stage of the game, I'm sure Marv had it figured out that I needed to progress some more and create more offense and begin to pick up and advance my style a little bit.
Mm. So, yeah, at this point, you've got two state tournaments under your belt, two state titles, you know, getting ready for your junior year at Watertown. Did you start feeling any pressure of wrestling going into your junior year, knowing the success that you'd already had?
No, I don't. You know, I don't think so. Marv didn't. He didn't really give you time to think about pressure. He just, if it was pressure enough just to be in his wrestling room. The expectations were high. He's anytime he's, I'm sure anytime he sensed you're thinking about the wrong things or your character or behavior were getting off track a little bit. He was never afraid to jump in. You know, he was going to make sure that he got you back on track quite rapidly. So, it was just getting to the point where, there's no question that, you know, he's trying to advance your technique. He's trying to advance the wrestling room. He's trying to make you guys a little bit more progressive in your styles and a little bit more diverse and a little bit more threatening offensively and defensively, a little bit tougher. And so, yeah, it's just one of those things where you go into the season and you either don't notice certain kids coming up and you kind of forget that, you know, you're being chased, but you just don't look back much. And so, once in a while, there's always going to be some young kid or somebody that evolves skill-wise that catches you off guard. And going into my junior year, that season, I think I'd beaten a state champion up at 126 because I ended up wrestling 119 most of the year. But, you know, I wrestled 19 all season, but he would shift me up and he would try different things to challenge me. And so on one of the first tournaments we went to, everything went good. Later in that season before Christmas, I ran into an individual named Mike Stroop and realized real fast that there's still some kids that are coming into their own. And I got knocked off for the first time that season. And it was a little bit of a shell shocker to my teammates and my coach, but
your only loss so far, your high school career.
Yeah, and it was to a pretty darn good kick, pretty good kid. He was very quick, pretty advanced as a wrestler, certainly not intimidated by me. And Pierre ended up being a pretty good nemesis for us because I ran into him, wrestled him about four times through those first 2 years in the And then ran into an individual named Kirk Simmet, who was a teammate of his that turned out to be a national champion for South Dakota State and a teammate of mine at South Dakota State. And so, good competition, production wise, both, you know, in those next 2 years, Pier and Watertown had some fantastic duels, some fantastic competition with each other. And those guys helped me along too, because it didn't take long for me to figure out that instead of just talking about advancing your technique, it's time to get it done, because these guys are going to be all over you if you don't.
Your junior year state tournaments in Rapid City, you're up to 119. You win your third straight title. Watertown squeaks by for the team title. You beat Vermilion by 2 points, beat Pier by 2.5 points, and you beat Tom Swanson of Rapid City Central for the title.
Yeah. We had three champions, and I think we had one individual get third, and we only needed four kids to win it. That was probably one of the last years ever that you win a state title, a team title, with the bare minimum. And, you know, you got 12 guys, 12 different weight classes, and you only place four and you win a state title. That's pretty rare. You gotta feel pretty fortunate to get that done.
Steve Cordell got a title, one of two titles that Steve got with his career at Watertown.
Yeah, he is a pretty dominant wrestler, pretty physical. And yeah, there's a lot of moments, and there was a big to do with our 138 pounder. We squeaked one out in the wrestlebacks or in the quarters or something. Gary Olson, one of my teammates, he ended up bumping off a really good kid from Spearfish. And had that not happened, and had that not been a really close match, obviously we wouldn't have won it. So yeah, that was probably, you know, my first dominant match in the finals, with an individual, and I'd already beaten one individual from Rapid City Central earlier in the year when I got bumped up to 126 during a duel, and then so I kind of nailed a couple of their kids, and so yeah, it was, again, doing it in Rapid City. You know, I think we had, you know, things couldn't have gone any better for us. Obviously, winning a state title with the bare minimum was quite remarkable at that time.
So here we are, your senior year, 1974. Did you prepare for that season any different from the previous seasons?
Well, we went down to South Dakota, took a team. For the first time, South Dakota decided to start doing something for our coaches association. Put together an outfit that went down and wrestled down in Mexico for a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks down in Mexico. So we went down there, and some of our coaches, we must have had about six coaches down there, and probably about, you know, 15, 20 kids. And went down there, and it was a good experience, culturally and otherwise, from a wrestling standpoint. You know, you were going to run into, you know, approximately anything down there as far as skill, and you really didn't know. So you won some, you lost some, everything was freestyle. And it was a good experience because you got to be around some pretty advanced wrestlers and some coaches that had some different approaches and had just walked out of college or were still competing for some club wrestling across the country. And so, you know, I got exposed quite a bit to an individual named Stan Opp from Aberdeen and wrestled for South Dakota State. So opportunity to pick up more technique, work on it real hard during that time frame, and add it into your repertoire and become a little bit more deadly with it.
What move in wrestling was always in your back pocket, ready to use at any time?
Well, other than the fact that I was probably going to outwork just every kid that I ever wrestled, and you were going to get pushed to the max, no one was going to outwork you. I would say mostly, you know, for the most part, as pretty creative. Always had a fireman's carry in my back pocket. Learned it from the best, named Stanhope. He just ground it into me and learned very fast that your offense was going to have to be on, you know, both sides, left and right, and you're going to have to be more versatile. And then defensively, you know, if you were going to attack, get after me, there's no question that you were going to be punished. And I believed in a lot of finesse. It's probably the one thing about wrestling that most wrestlers enjoy. And that is if you finesse somebody, it just means you're outthinking them and out techniquing them and you have a lot of fun with that. And so, it was going to be very difficult for somebody to outthink me. There was obviously more things I was eventually going to learn at the college level, but in the high school level, I was certainly having a lot of fun, out finessing and outthinking everybody and knowing that, you know, you got everybody on their heels.
Your senior year, you moved up two weight classes from your junior year. Did you think early on that you would just move to 119 and not all the way up to 126, or?
No, I think I was pretty realistic about things. I knew, you know, even though I was, you know, one of the smaller siblings in the household, I knew, you know, my brothers were bigger, they were taller, they were thicker. And so I knew I'd keep growing some, just didn't know how much, but.
So you go to 132.
Yeah, 132. I had the option to wrestle 26 that year, but we had another senior in the lineup that wasn't going to fit at 32. And so Marv just asked me to go 32 and let him wrestle 26. And that was fine. I think, you know, a couple kids across the state were looking for me to go down to 26. Wrestle that weight class, but
they were very happy you didn't go down to 126.
Well, yeah, and then it also caused a little bit of turmoil for me. I had to work at it a little bit that year, and obviously that was the year that I ran into Kirk Simmet, wrestled him four times that year,
and he's the defending champion from 112, you know, from the previous year.
Yep. And so, yeah, old Kirk Simmet and Mike Stroop were teammates, and that was one thing I learned very quickly is that very, very explosive wrestlers and had a lot of natural fast twitch muscles, and I had to be on my toes when I wrestled those guys. Felt really good about wrestling Kirk in the duel. That was the third time I'd wrestled him that year, and handled him quite easily in that match because he opened up quite a bit, and that kind of backfired on him. And so I didn't know what I was going to get when I hit him in the finals that year. I just knew I was going to get a pretty good wrestler, but I was kind of hoping it was going to be the same Kirk Simmet I ran into at that dual meet. But I did kind of assume that he would make some adjustments and not open up quite so much. And yeah, it was a tight battle to the end, and he made me work for it. And I had to be really, really sure that, as explosive as he was, that I stayed busy right up until the very last second, because I knew he was pretty dangerous.
And how great that state tournament was in Watertown, your hometown. That was pretty awesome. Two times you had the state tournament in Watertown.
Yep, two times, and it was always fun to wrestle in Watertown. It was always a great experience. I always felt as that arena was, you know, I hated it when they moved the state tournaments out of there. My own kids wrestled at state tournaments there. And so it was always fun because the crowd was close to you and you always had great crowds and, you know, great participation and educated crowds, you know, everybody kind of knew what was going on. And so, yeah, to finish up my career there, it was, in high school was a lot of fun.
What was going through your mind after you won your fourth straight title, something that had never been done in Class A? Your high school career is over. What was going through your mind?
Oh, you know, I think the only thing that was crossing my mind is, where am I going to go wrestle at in college? South Dakota State was recruiting me pretty hard, and I had opportunity to go down to Oklahoma State and some of them places later that spring. Usually you didn't sign a letter of intent back in those days until you get a little bit closer to the summer or deep into the spring. I knew I had a national USA wrestling tournament to go to down in Colorado. And went down there, did pretty well, took third down there, knocked off an individual that was going to go to Iowa State and had already signed down there. So ran into a couple of tight matches that I lost, you know, to a couple of Colorado kids, I believe, and then knocked off Iowa State's number one kid. And then the recruiting began at that point. So some individuals wanted me to come down, Oklahoma State wanted me to visit and all that stuff. And I guess that kind of hurried the process at South Dakota State to get me signed. Marv Sherrill is a graduate from South Dakota State. And I didn't see any reason to go far from home, and it worked out pretty good, and I always felt pretty comfortable with going to South Dakota State and wrestling for Greg Schmidt.
You go to South Dakota State. This is 1975, and they're wrestling in the North Central Conference. What was the step up like moving from high school to college? I mean, you saw success right away, but what was the step like once you first got there?
Well, you learned real fast that with some of your teammates and mostly your coaches, if you could score or get away or create better defense or survive certain situations, you were going to have success. And that you learned real fast that if I can get away or survive or ride, the workouts that I had with Greg Schmidt or some of the coaches that were in that room, then I figured I could go with anybody. So, you know, you always kept that in mind, because in that wrestling room that you were going to take some beatings from. If they weren't teammates, they were going to be your coaches. And so, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that those beatings were going to be positive from the standpoint that, you know, you were going to have to figure things out technically, and your skill level is going to have to now take another step up. There's no question about that. So I felt really good about that, because we had everything in the room that we needed. We had an ex-high school teammate, not necessarily a teammate when I was on the varsity, but Mike Ingles was an assistant coach that year. Greg Schmidt was the head coach, and he's the one who recruited me there. So you had to work your tail off, and everyone knew that. So I felt really good about the production I was having that year. Had some knockdown dragouts with some individuals in the North Central Conference. You learned real fast the old North Central Conference in wrestling, and I'm sure in most sports felt that way. It's one of the best conferences in the United States, meaning it was a Division II conference, and you had the opportunity to go wrestle Division I if you wanted to. And so that conference had a reputation, a proven reputation, that it's one of the best in the country. And so it didn't take you long that whether you're going up to North Dakota or over to University of Northern Iowa or over into Minnesota against Mankato or St. Cloud or one of the other schools around, you're going to run into good kids. And so it kept you on your toes, and it obviously expanded your technique and your thought pattern as far as making sure you're always ready and making sure you're tough enough to go with whoever you need to go with.
As a freshman at SDSU, you qualify for the national wrestling tournament. You lose in the quarterfinals. Did you consider that year a successful year, not knowing exactly what to expect as a college wrestler?
Yeah, I considered it a success. I mean, I was, you know, much like in Watertown when I popped on the scene as a freshman and started having success. It surprised everybody else, but I didn't know any better. And Marv expected me to go out and win. And so that's just what you did. And so in college, it was pretty much the same thing. You expect to show up. And even though some kids, you know, were not producing necessarily as a, you know, consistently as a team, you know, it was important for me to get out there and make things happen. And so, you know, you get put on the map and you get people's attention and you realize real fast that, you know, with success at the college level comes, you know, leadership. And everyone knew that, you know, if I'm going out there, that I was to be counted on. And so it was just a matter of starting to get a team to be more consistent and that sort of thing. And then, you know, at the end of the year, that year probably was when I finished up. I wasn't happy about how I finished. I wasn't happy about how that turnout was, because the individual I beat the week before or 2 weeks before at the North Central Conference Finals, he went on to win the national title, and I didn't place. And so you find out there's a real fine line from results or no results. It didn't take anything away. It didn't mean that that individual forgot about me. He knew I was there, but he got the results and I didn't get the results in that national tournament. And that was, it was a learning lesson.
And some motivation, probably motivation too, because the next year, look at you, you're wrestling still at 126. Your record was 40-7, the first Jackrabbit to win 40 matches in a season. The Division II Wrestling Championships are in Fargo, and here you are. You get to the championship match, and you're taking on the defending champion from a year earlier, 13-2.
Yeah, it was a pretty good year. We ended up, you know, we finished out that freshman year losing Greg Schmidt. He ended up going into private business with Daktronics, and so I was a little bit heartbroken over that. And then, so we ended up picking up a new coach named Mickey Martin out of University of Oklahoma, or Oklahoma State, I believe. And so he jumped on board, and he brought in some kids from the South and some other coaches from different areas, some unique individuals that in the long run ended up helping me out, helping all of us out, obviously. And I didn't really have a fast start that year. But I did from mid-season on. I placed in the Midlands that year, in Chicago. Big tournament. A lot of the Olympians and D1 wrestlers would go to that tournament. That was a huge tournament. I felt really good about that tournament. And so I placed at that tournament and then went on to win the D2s and wrestling a defending national champion from San Francisco. And our styles were somewhat similar. And I think that caught that individual off guard. And I major decisioned him and won the outstanding wrestler that year.
Next year, you're back at the national finals. You're in Cedar Falls, Iowa, but you lose in the finals to a guy from Cal Bakersfield. In the finals again, but then here comes 1978. What happened in 1978?
Well, in 78, I decided to redshirt. We had another coaching change. It's one of the things in college wrestling you realize real fast that if you want to create havoc in your own mind, not necessarily that I created it, but if those things happen where changes are made at the college level, business is business, and all of a sudden the guy who recruited you there isn't your coach anymore, and you get somebody new and he's there for 2 years, and then that individual leaves and now you end up with another new coach. And it was I came straight out of high school, you know, I had not redshirted, went straight into things, felt really good about stuff, and all of a sudden started to second guess the system that I was in a little bit, and decided, you know, I need to just focus on school. I'm just going to go to school, and I'll decide maybe down the road here whether I'm going to finish my senior year or just focus on school. And
how long did that take?
Well, about halfway through that year, I suppose. You know, my things went better in the classroom for me. I felt pretty good about what I was doing in that area, and then definitely took a break from wrestling. Didn't spend a lot of time in the wrestling room that year, and started coming back to that wrestling room a little bit later that year that I redshirted, and decided that, yeah, I'm going to come back and work hard and get this last season in for my senior year, and knew at that point that I wanted to be a coach, wanted to finish up strong, you know, do it right, and because I'm not far off from the workforce.
Well, timing was pretty good. You do come back in 79, and oh, look at that. Brookings is hosting the national championships. That had to be pretty cool. But you know what? You got to the championship again. You know, in high school, you're at 4 state championship matches. In college, you got 3 of 4, and this was your last year. But you fell to a kid from Cal State Bakersfield. What happened in that match, and then what were your thoughts after that very last match?
Well, I know I got tired of seeing Cal State Bakersfield.
Year before and this year?
Yeah, they had a really super program. Some of the better wrestlers in the country, and they're really solid in an area that I was solid in, and that was wrestling on the feet. They just gave me all kinds of problems. They're always tight matches, tough matches, but very disciplined wrestlers. You know, fantastic efforts out of them. I think I was seeded 5th in that tournament that year. I had shoulder surgery back in October. Tried to make a early comeback, struggled with that a little bit, and finally got on track and probably halfway through January. And so my season was a little bit short-lived because of my surgery, but you know, I felt good about my comeback, felt good about going into the state tournament. Obviously learned some things, and that individual just did a good job with me that year in the finals. And yeah, I was pretty disappointed in it, but you don't spend a lot of time looking back in the sport. You move on, and that's about all you can do.
Career record at SDSU, 128 wins, 24 losses. You graduate from SDSU, and you talked about you wanted to be a teacher, be a coach. You did become a coach and a teacher. And Spearfish, was that your first stop?
That was my first job. I spent a year in grad school at SDSU, kind of helped them out, helped my teammates out a little bit, and got a little bit involved. Terry Linander was the head wrestling coach at that time. So I stuck around for a year in the program. It was, you know, learned some great, valuable lessons, you know, through that year. That gave me my first experience. Did a little bit of teaching at the college level in the PE area, and then decided it was time to jump in and get both feet wet, so to speak, and walked over into Spearfish, who really hadn't done that much as a wrestling team. They told me a lot about a lot of good kids and that sort of thing. I think I had one returning state place winner in that lineup that came up. We had a lot of seniors in the wrestling room that year, my first year. And I know I found out how much work it was going to take very quickly, and they found out how hard they were going to have to work to appease my standards. So it was a fun year, a lot of good memories from that season, a lot of good kids. We ended up, I believe, putting 3 guys in the finals that year. Our 185 pounder that year ended up placing in the USA Nationals and Greco-Roman that following summer. So those guys, I don't know. I'm not sure I would have stuck around for me that year, because They had to work their tails off. They were, I was amazed at how hard they worked, and it was interesting how hard I pushed them, and how hard they were willing to work and not walk away from it. So it was a fun season. I think we ended up placing about 5 kids that year. I think we beat Marv Charles, the Watertown Arrows, that year in the state tournament, I believe. That was a personal goal, and you always want to impress your old coach, somebody you think so highly of. And Marv never ever liked losing, so I'm not so sure he looked at it that way. But he's the one who produced me, and he's the one who pushed me, and he's the one who taught me how to win. So I didn't know any other way how to do it. And if I could beat Marv Sherrill, it was never a negative thing. It was always a sign to me that Marv was very successful in pushing me.
4 years at Spearfish, 20 years at Pier. You're also then off to Rapid City Stevens, then Rapid City Central. I mean, what a lifetime of wrestling, Rick. You know, over 3 decades dedicating your expertise to the kids of South Dakota. You know, what gave you the most enjoyment of coaching wrestling?
Well, you know, you always feel really, really, really good about, you know, success stories, kids who win a state title and that sort of thing. But you're probably your most rewarding ones are, you know, you always know when you kind of got a potential state champion in the room. And you really enjoy the heck out of the success those kids have. It doesn't mean that it was a cakewalk. It doesn't mean that they didn't earn it. It doesn't mean that you didn't have to work hard, that you didn't have to make some tweaks here and there to get them to produce or to get them to get by certain kids. But it's those individuals that place at the state meet, get 7th, get 8th, get 5th, get 6th, maybe on occasion get 3rd or 4th, that when the year started, you know, people were thinking, you know, who's he going to end up with in that weight class? Because obviously this kid can't wrestle there. We got to find somebody to wrestle or, you know, to step into the lineup here at this. There's got to be somebody else in the room. And in the end, that individual that ends up keeping that spot, ends up producing for you, ends up placing at the state meet, ends up finishing the season at 500, but goes into the regional and places in the top 3 and makes it the state and knocks somebody off that was a returning state place winner and earns a spot and places it. Those are the kids that you realize real fast that, man, you know, that's pretty rewarding. That individual, you didn't even think he was going to be in your lineup when the year started. And so when things like that happen, you realize just how much influence you got over the kids, you know, and how well if they just work hard and listen, you know, they can produce. So pretty rewarding. It's a lot of fun to watch those types of individuals. Not that it's not fun to have state champions, but those individuals give you a lot of pride. Because in reality, sometimes you know that individual's placing, but you're still trying to figure out how in the heck did this happen.
South Dakota's had a great, rich history of wrestlers getting to the Olympics, performing at the Olympics, medaling at the Olympics. Did you ever trying out for the Olympics?
Well, no, that was always, you know, when you're going through things and towards the end of your high school career, going into your beginning of your college career, you get a little bit more realistic about stuff once you're in college. But, you know, I went to the 1978, I went to the World Game Tryouts out in Squaw Valley. Out in that area, they had a training camp in that area. And then that summer, myself and Jay Swanson went out there and wrestled at the trials. And they weren't the finals. There were still some kids that were not there. And so we had some good goals with individuals. I lost, you know, on criteria to one individual. So it was a good experience. Got to work out with Dan Gable and a lot of good kids out there. you find out real fast that there's a whole different world. If you want to live it, those are the guys who are living it. And you wonder how, because it's not like today's wrestlers where you have financial backing or, you know, you belong to a club that will send you everywhere. We just jumped in a vehicle and we worked out hard that summer, and we decided, you know, if Dan Gable will invite us, we're showing up. And so that's just kind of, we took that as an honor in itself. Dan Gable gave us the okay. Yep, you guys can come. You guys are good. And so that was fun. It was a good experience for us. But you knew when you walked out of there and you realized, okay, you know, this isn't a group of wrestlers I'm going to dominate. I can wrestle with them, but certainly not going to dominate these guys. And it's going to be a grind. If you want to stick around and live here and walk and breathe wrestling,
that would have been the place to be. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be the place to be, but it's not a very realistic place for you. You realize that, you know, I have to move on. I've got to have a job. I've got to have an income. I've got to, you know, I can't live out of my car. It's not going to happen. So, but it was a fun experience, and that's the closest I ever came to it. You know, get to wrestle some of the guys that, you know, are going to be on the world team and obviously be part of the Olympic system. Now, it was fun. You know, it was something you can look back at a little bit and have a little fun thinking about it. But yeah, it became a very, very quick reality that that's a different world.
Two more questions. You've seen an explosion of girls wrestling in South Dakota. Are you surprised with the number of girls who are taking up the sport in the state?
No, you know, we would see it through the years. We wouldn't see girls teams, but we'd see girls competing with the boys and all the youth wrestling through the years. When I was a coach at Pier and I was coaching out here, and I took my kids around to tournaments and stuff like that, that once in a while we'd run into pretty hard-nosed, solid, technically solid, hardworking, solid girls that would compete with the boys. But we knew that there was always going to be a little bit of dissension there with fans, because we knew that not only was there going to be some resistance with the girls wrestling the boys, but there obviously was a push in those days where the fans wanted their own sport, meaning wrestling. They wanted their own impact on the sport of wrestling through girls wrestling girls and not having to share the limelight with the boys. They wanted their own system. So we knew it was coming. Obviously in South Dakota, it started a little bit later than other places like Minnesota, and the state of Washington and places like that, probably Iowa. So I help out with, I still volunteer and help out with East Middle School Wrestling here in Rapid City. My son coaches out there and teaches out there, my middle son. So I help out and getting involved with his wrestling program at that middle school level. You know, I immediately walked in for the first time because I'd already retired and been done for 3 years, and then walked into where they have girls and the boys wrestling, and they're not wrestling each other. They have their own system. They have their own competitions. They might be at the same location, but their brackets are full of girls. And so it was a little bit surprising that how quickly it took over. But after you realize you've been in the room and you've been around the girls and they're picking up technique and you're showing them things, you realize real fast, boy, this reminds me of my seventh grade year when we worked our tails off and our expectations were to be successful. Our expectations were to pin somebody. Our expectations were to get after things. And these girls, that was the one thing that probably caught me off guard more than anything, is that these girls are serious. They are real, real serious. They're hard workers. they're probably in some respects more serious about their success level than even the boys in certain rooms. They get after it, and they are very, very serious about being successful in this sport. And these girls, from what I can tell, they're working really hard. And so because they're working so hard, it doesn't surprise me that that the sport is growing and exploding to the point where it's very recognizable and very acceptable to the fans. Everyone is really enjoying the skill level of the girls, that how quickly they've picked this up and how hard they are willing to get after it. And it's fun to watch. And I think the fans and all the coaches across this state and all the other states are recognizing that, wow, you know, this is going much better than some people, the skeptics have even realized.
Last one, Rick. You are retired. What keeps you busy right now in Rapid City?
Well, what keeps me busy in the late fall, early winter is, you know, I am helping with the wrestling at East Middle School. So that's kind of fun. That's been pretty rewarding. It's always fun to stay involved and see how the wrestling is coming around at the middle school level. And then I've been involved for 35 years, even when I was coaching, and because that's where I started in Pierce, South Dakota, with my driver's ed. I've been doing that for 35 years. Back in 1989, got started. 1989, 1990, and got started. And so I've been doing that as a part-time, being very, very busy in it. But obviously, being retired, I've got to watch the number of hours I put in a year, because I don't want to go over that point get my own retirement reduced because I've worked too hard. So I've got to make sure I keep a calculator close by, because I'm not going to take a pay cut just because the driver's ed. But I have a lot of fun with it, enjoy it. I've stayed busy with that. Now, other than that, ride a lot of motorcycles in the Black Hills take advantage of this area, obviously, meaning the Black Hills. I certainly know where the state's bike trail is.
The Mickelson Trail, yeah.
Yeah, the Mickelson Trail. Spent a lot of time on that bike trail. You bet. I've gone through that probably about four times. So, yeah, that's a great, great environment, great area to live in.
In Play with Craig Maddock is made possible by Horton in Britain, where smiling at work happens all the time. Apply now at HortonWW.com. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It helps us gain new listeners. This has been In Play with me, Craig Maddock. This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.